Hey, so welcome back to Midnight in the Mountains. It's Laura here. And Aaron, how you doing?
I'm doing fantastic tonight. Just getting off a very long weekend of work.
Yeah, I actually have work off this weekend. I'm usually, well, lately I've been working like 7 days a week. I have my regular job, and then on the weekend I bartend, which I absolutely love. But I had a wedding to go to this weekend, so I took off.
Now, that sounds like lots of fun. And I've kind of been working a lot, too. I got my regular factory job, and then I've also been working at my buddy's nursery, selling trees and hydrangeas and plants. And it's kind of a nice change, you know, to go from, you know, loud factory work to, you know, being outside and just talking to people and, you know, learning about some of the native plants of Tennessee. It's been a really interesting experience, because I've learned a lot of things that seem very obvious now that I know them, but that I didn't know before, you know, like how to fertilize things and the proper way to water plants and the proper time to plant them. And it's just been a really interesting spring and summer working there, for sure.
Yeah, I think I would like working there. From
and
what
it makes
you
it a lot
me.
Better is that the owners are some old friends of mine. So I know those guys really, really well. So it's kind of fun to work with them and just kind of like, you know, pick their brains about things. And it's also, you meet a lot of very unique individuals at the nursery.
Well, that sounds interesting.
The nursery is in kind of one of the, how would you put, like a richer part of the states. And so you get a lot of people, or you get some people that are very demanding. You know, they want to have their plant this way, this way, this way. They got to have it right now. And then you get other people that are just, you can sit there and talk to them for hours, and it's just a fun conversation. So, you know, you get the gamut of people, good and bad. Or maybe I should say good and interesting.
Yeah, I guess that's a better way to put it,
it's a better way to look at it. A generous view of some of my customers.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I'm lucky, though, with my job on the weekends. I mean, like you said, it's like old family friends. I mean, that's kind of how my workplace is, but it also is family run. And then everybody that works there, and then there's a bunch of regulars that come in, and it kind of feels like a big family. It's really nice. And most of our customers are pretty good. The only time we have customers that can be jerks is like when we have like a one-off event where it's something different, like a certain type of fundraiser, or we had an October thing last year. And so many people showed up, and these like weird people were just coming out of the woodwork. We had to cut somebody off, like we couldn't serve them alcohol anymore, which I've had to do that at other bars that I've worked at, but never at this place. So it's just so strange. And then we had like a fundraiser the other week during the week, and these people came in and they were just so freaking rude. And I looked over at the other girl and I was like, where the hell did these people come from? Like, what is this? She's like, I don't know. They weren't like this last year.
Must be some newcomers in the area. Some people stumbled away. They were like, hey, we're going there today. Come on, let's crash the place.
I don't want to ever see them again. Like, we have things of hand sanitizer sitting on the bar counter. And this one woman went to use it. And I guess, because you know how, like, if it dries, it kind of gets clogged up. Got clogged, but it ended up, like, shooting out onto her shirt. And I couldn't really hear her. And I thought she said she spilled wine on her shirt. And I was like, oh, well, it's a good thing it's white wine, you know, like, it's not going to stain. And then she starts bitching. And I realized she's, like, getting mad at us because our freaking hand sanitizer is clogged, and she got all really nasty, and the guy that was with her was like, oh, well, I guess you know, some customers are harder to please than others. And he's like, I'm sorry. And she's just still bitching away, and I'm like, oh my god. So they walk out the door, and he's like, thank you. And I'm like, you're welcome. And she's like, thank you. And I just didn't even respond. Don't let the door hit you in the ass.
Here in Tennessee, we had a very, very cold March, and it went from, in one day, it went from 55 degrees down to 32 degrees in the span of just a couple hours. And it killed a bunch of plants.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, it was crazy. And it was just one day. But the problem with that was like the 2 weeks beforehand, it had started getting warmer, you know, like 60 degrees during the day, you know, like springtime. So a lot of the plants started waking up. They started pulling water and nutrients up. And then it flash froze and it killed a lot of plants. Like when I say a lot, I mean a lot. So this spring and early summer at the nursery was a very, very busy time. Everybody had dead stuff. Everybody wanted to buy new things. And there was a couple weekends there where we were very busy. There was six of us there. And we never stopped from the time we opened at 8 a.m. till the time we closed at 5 p.m. It would just run, 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 run the whole day. But you get couples come in there and, you know, the guy would be like, oh, just get whatever, you know, talking to his wife, just get whatever you want. You know, I don't care. I don't care. And she's like, well, what do you think about this? Well, I don't really like that. You know, they obviously had no idea what they were on it. They knew they wanted something, but they, you know, they didn't communicate to each other that well. And so I ended up starting to carry a quarter around with me. So anytime a couple would start, not arguing, but disagreeing that, oh, I want this and I want that, what I would tell them, I said, all right, heads, she gets it, what she wants. Tails, he get what he wants. And if it lands on the edge, you guys got to buy both of them. And usually that was enough to get them laughing. And then they would kind of at that point be like, okay, well, we're going to get this right here. We're going to get this right here. And I used that so many times just to kind of like push it along. So because there was a lot of people there. I can't sit here and talk to you for 45 minutes. I'd love to, but I got things to do. So the quarter trick, I'm going to be using that many, many times in the future, I'm sure.
That's super clever. That makes me laugh. I like that a lot.
The funny thing is that at the nursery where we have all the plants and where I'd be talking to these people is like a gravel parking lot. Like it's just big gravel stones. There is zero ways that quarter ever would have landed on its edge and actually sat that way. But nobody ever called me out on it. Not one couple out of all the times I use it. Nobody ever said, well, that can't land on the edge. They were laughing. And so that was always the fun part for me, you know, if I can make people laugh and sell them some plants.
You're doing a good job.
Well, my boss was happy.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, if you can keep the customers happy and they still buy something, perfect.
Perfect. Because then they'll probably come back.
Absolutely.
You know, they have a good experience.
Absolutely.
And with that nursery being a little bit on the smaller side, and it's the only one that's in this particular town, that it makes it very you get a lot of repeat customers because, you know, it's very simple to go there. They know us. We know them. And so, yeah, it's been pretty good,
yeah,
for sure.
I like it. Sounds good.
But some of the other things I've done this summer, let's see, what else did I do besides work? I did go to Florida for a week. That was very nice. I took my Frenchie with me, Bowser. And you know, with French Bulldogs, you got to be kind of careful because they're not really equipped to deal with the heat. But not this guy. I think he would have stood out there all day long if I let him. He was fine. Like, just put him under the umbrella. When he dried off, go get him wet again. Bring him back under the umbrella. Perfect little angel for the most part.
Wow. Yeah. I remember a couple years ago, we had actually gone down to Florida together.
We did.
And the other Bulldogs that were there were not handling the heat so well.
No.
It didn't. Yeah.
That was actually Bowser's mom.
Yeah.
That we took down there. And she didn't handle it. No, she didn't handle it too well at all. But I don't know. And the weird thing is with him being black, I thought it would be like way worse. But no, he was just as happy could be. He just lay under my chair and try to drink my beer and, you know, dig for the crabs. But yeah, it was actually a really good time. It was nice to, because it's been such a busy summer. It was really nice to kind of get away for a week and just sit back and, you know, just all those Florida things you can do that you can't really do in Tennessee.
Yeah, sounds so good.
So I think, you know, we were talking earlier and you came across an interesting story in one of your books that I think you wanted to share today.
Yeah.
I'm going to let you take it from here, and I got a little something to add afterwards, but the show is yours.
Okay, cool. Yeah, so I have tons of books, and I have a lot of books on haunted Pennsylvania, and I have always wanted to do more than just, you know, sit behind the microphone and talk about places. Like, I actually want to go places. I want to experience things. I want to do paranormal investigations. So in my one book, which actually, you know, if you go back to our Appalachian, the trains, the railroad, haunted railroads. There was a book that I read by David J. Seibold and Charles J. Adams III, and it was my grandfather's book, and I actually have other books by these authors that were my grandfather's books. So the book I have in my hand right now that I'm going to read from is Pocono Ghosts, Legends, and Lore, which is the first one. And, you know, I had read through it. I still haven't read every single one of them. But I was on my phone one night and I was just like kind of looking for haunted stuff, and I came across this one story and I thought to myself that it sounded familiar. So I went into my ghost book and I looked it up, and sure enough, the story is in my ghost book. So I'm going to read the story from here, and then I actually went to the place where it's a story about a tragic murder and how it was unsolved. And I actually think that recently it had been solved. I'm not completely positive on that. I need to go back and check. But I went to where she's buried, where her family's buried, and then I went and took a drive on the road that she was murdered on. And that road is definitely spooky. And I don't think I'm saying that just because it's already in my head, because I know the story, but it is like creepy. It's this like dark, winding road with all these like trees hanging over it, not letting much light in. And then you'll go spots where there's like houses, but then there's like nothing. And then there's some old houses on that road also. So just kind of trying to put myself back into the 1800s and thinking about what it was like back then, it definitely spooks you out. So in this book, this chapter is called A Sign from the Corpse. An enduring mystery in the Sandhill area of Hamilton Township, Monroe County, is the brutal, unexplained, and unsolved Halloween 1880 murder of Etna Bittenbender. Young Etna, eldest daughter in Sam Bittenbender's family, went to visit a neighborhood just before dark. She promised to return home a bit later in the evening and was in bright spirits when she left. Etna cut through a wooded area near the road between Sand Hill and Neola and met her destiny there on the cruel hands of an unknown assailant. Unaware that his daughter had been cut down by a murderer, Sam Bittenbender tended to farm chores while Etna was visiting the neighbors. As he carted a load of firewood along the roadway, he was oblivious to the fact that he passed his girl's battered body. The body was eventually discovered by Etna's brothers and sisters, who were returning home from the Reese School. It is remembered by some who heard the story passed down through their families that it may have been the ghost of Etna Bittenbender which led them to her corpse. They said the body was hidden in thick underbrush near a stone fence along the road. The girl's head had been caved in by a solid wooden club, which was later found nearby. But as the Bittenbender's children's team of horses carried them along their way, they reared up at the precise location of the grisly remains. It is said that the animal sensed the presence of the girl's beckoning spirit, which caused them to pause in fear and lead the brothers and sisters to the grim discovery. A suspect was rounded up by police a few weeks later, but not enough evidence was secured to convict him. The Etna Bittenbender murder and the possibility of her ghost still haunting the road from Sand Hill to Neola remains a tasty morsel of mystery in southern Monroe County. And that is the story in this book.
What I have is the actual obituary. I believe this is the Monroe County newspaper, and it was dated November 5th, 1880. So that would have been like 6 days after she was murdered. This is kind of long, but it does give a little bit more details. The murder, which took place last Sunday afternoon about 2 miles from Snydersville, Monroe County, was a brutal one. The victim was a young daughter of Samuel Bittenbender. She was a little over 17 years of age. She left her parents' home about 4 o'clock last Sunday afternoon to go to a place where she was hired as a maid servant. She had to pass through the woods, and she was watched, as is supposed, by some person who knew of her coming. He had tracked her about 200 yards from the public road, undoubtedly for the purpose of outrage. But from all appearances, he did not accomplish his design, and then probably upon her threatening that she would betray him, he committed the murderous deed. The corpse was found on Monday morning between 8 and 9 o'clock by her own sisters. They were going to school and past the house where she was hired when the women of the house asked the girls where their sister was. They replied that she left home on Sunday afternoon to come over, and being informed she had not been there, the girls started back to inform their parents, when to their horror they found the murdered sister lying in a fence corner by the side of the public road. They ran home and told their father that their sister was shot. He immediately ran to the scene and found his daughter had been most cruelly murdered. Her head was lying on a stone, and lying near her were stones and a club which had been used to kill her. Her head was fearfully battered and broken. 5 or 6 different gashes were in her skull so that a person could look right into it, and her brain was lying out. For all appearances, there was a terrible struggle, for it was about 200 yards or over from the public road where the body was found to the place back in the woods where they traced the first drop of blood. So that seems the murderer could not fully overcome her until she got down to the road. Her father passed the place on Monday morning with a load of wood without noticing her. At first it was thought that the murder had been committed by tramps, but now the prevailing opinion of the neighborhood is that it was accomplished by some person who knew of her coming through the woods. Several arrests have been made, but no positive evidence against anyone has been brought to light, and more arrests will be made. A detective from New York is here investigating the matter, which has created great excitement all over this section. Women are afraid to go out or stay at home alone. Hundreds of people visited the afflicted family. She will be buried today, and it is expected that her funeral will be one of the largest ever held in this section. The poor victim was a beautiful young girl and was respected by all who knew her. So that was the actual obituary that was posted in the newspaper then. And then I was reading a little bit farther, that other link that you sent me. And when I was reading through it, they actually, somebody confessed to it on March 17th, 1881. So this was going to be about 6 months later, five or six months later. The Reading Eagle reported that John Pfeiffer had murdered his cellmate John McBride at the Eastern Penitentiary in Philadelphia before killing himself. The initial article did not provide a connection to Edna's murder, but the following day an article about the murder-suicide created a link between the two. After Pfeiffer strangled McBride, he left behind a message on a piece of slate. On the front of it was written, "Miss Emma Bittenbender, Jackson Township, last fall, me and my cousin George Kraft, I am." Here the message ended abruptly, and on the back side of the slate was a second similar message. "I also killed that girl in Jackson County Township. Cousin George Kraft last fall was arrested, his brother. They call me the devil and a witch, so if you all knew all the people I have killed, you would astonish, go in New York."
Yeah, I actually have this link up, and I'm looking at what you're reading, too, and it's kind of like they spell devil, D-I-V-I-L, and then witch, W-I-C-H, and then it's really poor English.
Yeah. I'm just going to read it just as it's written. I have...
Yeah, go for it.
All right, let me go back. "They call me the devil and a witch, so if all you knew all the people I have killed, you would astonish, go in New York. There you find out all about me. I am sorry for me own family, for I know they use them rough on."
I think he's saying that he feels embarrassed and he's sorry to put his family through this, basically, is the gist.
I would agree with that. Something about New York. So maybe this guy was in New York and had done some things that, yeah, you know, maybe some murders or something.
Well, I mean, back then he could have been an immigrant and came in through New York. You know what I mean? Because didn't most of the immigrants came in through?
Yeah, they would have almost all came through New York. Yeah, maybe for sure.
Yeah, maybe I don't know what I'm talking about, but I mean, I know some did come through the port of Philadelphia too.
And it could be almost, you know, it could be just that this guy is just not educated at all. You know, that he. know, he maybe he wasn't an immigrant. Maybe he was like, quote unquote, local guy, like from Pennsylvania or New Jersey or something like that. And he just was not educated at all. I mean, he could obviously write, not that great. But
what are you saying, that us Pennsylvanians aren't educated?
Well, you know, parts of Pennsylvania, to be fair, in the 1880s, parts of Pennsylvania would have been fairly rural places.
No, I know.
Right? I mean, same as Tennessee. Oh, for sure. Mean, Tennessee still has some very uneducated places. But
yeah.
We always laugh whenever we go like off the beaten track. We always say, if we hear banjos, just keep on keeping on. Don't stop.
Yeah, you better watch out for them feral people that are hiding out in the woods. In the Smoky Mountains down there. Hell no. Like, that's a real thing. That's terrifying.
What was that movie that was then where the banjo was played? I always forget. You know, there was a very famous movie that it's a horror movie where, you know, the feral people play banjos and they catch the – and I can't think of what movie it is. Like, is it The Hills Have Eyes or something?
I didn't see that, but it wasn't The Hills Have Eyes. There's a horror movie that was based off of Centralia in Pennsylvania, but there's also like Cabin in the Woods, which I did see a long time ago when I used to watch horror movies like a crazy person. Since now, like, I've developed anxiety and I cannot watch any of that stuff. That's back when I was like a teenager.
I went and saw when they remade Cabin in the Woods, and this has been a while ago. I think they took some liberties in the remake of that because it is very different than the original one. I don't think I ever saw the original one, but it was not – it is a horror, but it's more almost sci-fi than horror.
Well, that's weird.
Yeah, it's got a pretty decent twist to it. Hmm. So, but I don't want to spoil it for anybody. So
what, like a 20-year spoiler alert? Or how old is it?
That is a good point. I mean, it's probably – I bet it's probably at least 10 years old. Maybe,
I don't know. 30. I remember, I think, actually. But yeah, I'm not going to bore people with figuring it out.
It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter how old it is. But the twist is basically these people go to the cabin in the woods, and it turns out that the cabin in the woods is actually this huge science experiment that's being put on by like some mad scientist, and they release some devils. And it's a very weird movie. Like, I enjoyed it. I would watch it again, but it was very weird. If you were expecting like a slasher film, you know, where these people in the woods and then it turns into this weird laboratory that's up underneath the cabin, and it's a different one for sure. But anyways, off of that tangent, the murderer here, I mean, we talked earlier that it was never really quote unquote officially solved, but this particular gentleman, John Pfeiffer, I mean, he did write out that that's what he did. So, I mean, I think you'd almost have to, you know, kind of take him for his word for it. Because it was almost like a deathbed confession, you know, because he was about to die too.
And like I said, I need to look into it because I can't really remember. So there is a book that's written on this, and my parents have the book. I don't think my mom read it, but my dad read it. And he knows someone else that read the book to them. They were talking about it and comparing notes. And the strangest thing is that they both said that they were having like really weird, really vivid dreams while they were reading this book about Etna, about the murder, things like that. And I should actually like go ask my dad what his dreams were actually about and what this other person's dreams were about. It's almost like there's something still there connected that she's almost trying to reach out and like tell them something or asking for help or something or whatever. But I wanted to read the book. I'm afraid I'm going to have some like really weird dreams and they're going to mess with me. So I kind of decided against it. Maybe if I get braver, I will at some point. But I just think it's strange. You know what I mean? That's not really a coincidence.
No, I don't think so at all.
I do. Yeah, I need to go ask if it was solved or not. Because I think it might have been, but I'm not sure.
Yeah, it'd be kind of interesting.
Because like, the whole premise of it was like this very old murder that hadn't been solved, which is why it was such a mystery.
And I guess technically, you know, to be absolutely fair, it was never proven in a court of law what happened. You know, nobody ever went to jail for it. There was never a trial. It was just that guy that was in a different jail cell that had written on that slate. Like, there was in this article, it said there were a couple of people that were arrested, they were questioned, but there was never like a trial because there was enough evidence mm-hmm. to convict anybody yeah. of it.
But yeah, I think that this was like from 2020 or something, this article was, but I think the book is even newer than that. So that's why I say I'm not quite sure. Oh. I'll need to check into it, maybe write it in the show notes or something or whatever. But
yeah, that'd be kind of interesting to see, mm-hmm. to see if it had actually been solved or not. You know, it'd be pretty interesting to solve a crime that was 150 years yeah. old, mm-hmm. 143 years old. That'd be pretty impressive too. But it's kind of an interesting story, especially the fact that, you know, that you visited it. And, mm-hmm. and I always feel like that kind of gives you like a little bit better connection to it. Like, you know, you were in that area, you know?
It does. It puts it more perspective, I guess, because like when I went, her family members are there and buried, and to actually see birth date and her death date, which is much before her parents, it just kind of is like has a sadness to it where it's, you know, you can actually see the dates that her parents passed away, and it was much after she died.
Yeah, it'd give it a very more personal feel, right?
Yeah, you know? Exactly.
When I finally come up there, you'll have to take me over there and show me that place, because I'd be really interested to see that. And I mean, I've seen the yeah. pictures of it and whatnot, but to see that old creepy road mm-hmm. and all the old houses and that old cemetery, because I mean, that cemetery from the picture looks fairly old as well.
Yeah, there's a lot of, I mean, it's like a lot of cemeteries. I mean, that it's got, you know, the older sections and then the newer sections to it. On a side note, I really love the very old cemeteries that you kind of have to hike to, and they're in the woods, you know, under trees and on a hill, and they have these very old tombstones and the very old shapes that they used to be. And the thing that bums me out, though, is that they're so old and they're so weathered and so worn that you can't make out what they say. I wish that those
right,
were still right. there, that you could still read that, because I just think it's neat. But so I pulled up here the pictures that I had taken. So her tombstone is one that does look very old. And on here it says, "Daughter Etna, daughter of Samuel and Margaret Bittenbender, murdered by some person unknown Sunday evening, October 31st, 1880, between the hours of 4 and 6 o'clock, aged 17 years, 1 month, and 8 days."
The very specific age.
Yeah, a lot of older tombstones will have dates written like that, which I think is kind of neat. And then they have, like, right, it kind of goes in a line, like, her tombstone's there, and then her parents is there, which looks a little bit newer. So I'm assuming it had to have been replaced or something, because there's no way that it can look this nice. Okay, actually, no. Yeah, I think I just misspoke. It says, Bittenbender, Samuel died May 1919, 85... aged 85 years, 8 months, and 8 days. And then underneath it says, Margaret died April 5th, 1914, aged 77. I can't make that out. It says 5 months and 4 days. So yeah, so this tombstone would have been from 1914. So I guess it could look this new, probably.
It also depends like what the tombstone was made out of too. You know, there's some rocks that are, that's why I think a lot of newer ones are just made out of granite, because of how hard it is, that it will actually last quite some time. Where, mm-hmm. I mean, it looks like Etna's, they just basically took a piece of, that's not granite. I don't know what that is, but.
But it's so, it has the moss mm-hmm. on top of it. So it, and that doesn't help because that wears it down too. But I can't think of the stone that it's made out of. There also is one that's next to it. It's a smaller one that says Peter A. Bittenbender, 1869 to 1944, and I believe that was her brother. Oh, and then so also what I noticed too, which I wanted to go over also, is that there's seashells placed at the bottom of this tombstone as an offering. And I've been to old cemeteries and stuff, and I've seen seashells placed at tombstones. And I never really thought much of it. I was just kind of like, oh, you know, maybe just people are putting shells because shells are pretty, whatever. And then it wasn't until I went to her grave that I saw these seashells here. And I was starting to think, well, why do people do that? So I actually looked it up and I found this article on it. And it says, seashells, enchanting symbols of life, death, and remembrance. It says, what begins as the body and outer protective layer of diverse and vibrant sea animals later wash ashore, vacant and lifeless as beautiful, captivating skeletal remains. Seashells are splendid examples of the beauty left behind, every life following death, the body being only a shell where the soul continues on. The intricate spiral shapes of some seashells symbolize eternal life and a safe journey from this world. Seashells have been symbols of life and death in religious beliefs since prehistoric times and have been used in funeral rituals throughout history. Shells were included in tombs to offer protection in ancient Egypt. They were placed as offerings in burials, as containers or jewelry, as well as archaeological remains in ancient Mesopotamia. Anthropologists in West Central Africa found burial locations nearly full of shell-adorned graves. The ancient Bakongo people and their descendants believed that the shell was a basin that carried and protected the soul on way to eternal life. Those same deep West African traditions were transported to America's South with the slave trade in 18th and 19th centuries. In coastal South Carolina, many African cemeteries have seashell-adorned gravesites believed the various patterns and types might throw off any wicked spirits and lead loved ones back across the sea to their homeland and the hereafter.
The seashell is a token of remembrance. Seashells placed at someone else's graves or altar is a showing that someone is remembered and honored. Seashells also have come to symbolize pilgrimage, especially one made to a final resting place. The scallop shell was used by St. James during his own journey and then by his followers that traveled to his shrine in Spain during the 9th century. Today, seashells left behind on a burial site often represent a loved one's journey to the grave, a little token in remembrance of the journey. These colorful artifacts help remind us that those that pass over never truly go away, but still abide in us forever and a day. So I personally have never heard of this tradition, I guess, for a good way of putting it. But I really like the symbolism for it. Like, it'd be interesting to see who put the seashells near Etna's gravestone.
Yeah, I wonder that too. I wonder if it was maybe a distant relative or maybe someone that had read the book and just felt moved by it and wanted to go leave something like that for her.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it could be any of those things, right?
Yeah.
She could still have relatives around there and, you know, maybe they know about the story and, you know, maybe it's like a yearly thing to go out and see, you know, great Aunt Etna.
Yeah. You know what? You're right. You're right. Yeah, so I wonder, just kind of in closing, we always hope that the person who's haunting and past has actually found peace and actually has moved on. And I do hope, you know, as much as, you know, you like a good ghost story, I don't want to hear that some soul is suffering and being tortured in whatever dimension or realm that they're actually stuck in. But it just does kind of make me wonder if there isn't something going on there with the fact that those weird dreams that my dad and then that other person had when they read the book. And I wonder how many other people actually experienced that too.
Yeah, it would be kind of interesting to see who else has experienced, you know, weird vibes out at, especially where she was murdered and you know, also right. the gravesite itself, you know, because that was a fairly violent murder and, you know,
yeah,
it was pretty graphic.
Yeah, because honestly, I didn't read the obituary. I just kind of looked at it, read the first couple sentences, kind of skimmed through. Okay, looks good. You know, send it to you. Here, read this kind of thing. And then you're reading it and I'm sitting here like, holy crap, yeah, that's horrendous.
They put a lot more details back in the newspapers back then than they would today, for sure.
Oh yeah, everything's got to be censored nowadays. Oh my Yeah, God forbid. Mm. But then the shit that they show on freaking TV.
Oh, no, no. That's stylized. That part's okay.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Whatever.
Yeah, I'm being very sarcastic there, just in case that didn't come off as well as it should. Because,
well, I understood it. Okay, well, I mean, I think that's about all I got.
I think that's about all I got. It was really interesting to hear about the seashell thing. Like, that is one thing that I've never, ever heard about. But it makes a lot of sense the way it was explained. So that was a really cool thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I really like it. Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. So, yeah, I'm with you, Laura. I think we'll wrap things up here. It was excellent to get back in the saddle and get to recording again. It's always a pleasure.
There's been so many things and just made it impossible to record. So hopefully now we can just get back on track and stick with it, because it does feel good. It definitely feels good to be doing it again, for sure.
100%.
And I guess with that being said, follow us on Instagram, midnight_in_the_mountains. Or you can email us your true ghost story if you just want to share a story with us. Or, you know, paranormal story, cryptid, whatever. We'd like to hear it. If you would like us to read it on the podcast, just, you know, let us know that so that we know that we can read it. That would be great. And you can email that to midnight_in_the_mountains@yahoo.com. And that's about it. So we will see you guys later.
Everybody have a fantastic rest of the night.